الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the merciful, the compassionate. All praises to Allah, the creator of the universes and their sustainer, the provider of believers and unbelievers. And may his choicest blessings be on the seal of his prophets, the last of his messengers and his holy progeny. And in particular, may his choicest blessings be on that fifth member in the household of the holy prophet, on Sayyid al-Shuhada, Aba Abdullah al-Husayn, salawatullahi wa salamu alayhi. Muhammad. Yesterday we reached the station that Imam Hussein alayhi salam made on his way to Karbala at Hajar and sent a letter to the Kufians through his messenger bin Asmasha, and how that messenger showed bravery in sending the curses to Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad and Yazid and sending salawat to Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. From there then, the Imam alayhi salam moved to another station, Miyahul Arab. And there, he met an eminent person of that village, Abdullah bin Mutir. That was a watering place in the desert, a place where the herdsmen would carry their cattle, the traveler would halt with his camels so that they all can get water. It was a watering place, and hence the word Miyah, Miyahul Arab. And there, as he comes in, Abdullah bin Mutir, who had his residence there and was the, as it were, the sheikh of the place, suddenly recognizes him. So he not only welcomes him, he approaches him and says, Yabna Rasulullah, what brings you here of all the places? And Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, you must have heard Muawiyah has died, and the people of Kufa have invited me to join them because they claim they do not have an imam and my presence might help them come to the right path and remain on the right path. Hence the duty to go to them. And instantly Abdullah bin Mutiyah says, Yabna Rasulullah, I remind you of what the Kufians have done. And I adjure you not to go there. Because, and this is the reason I'm setting out the discussion on that particular station, that speech made by a person in the desert, not a person in the metropolis. So you can see the fame and the reputation of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his level even in these deserts. That makes it easier to understand how Farazdaq would say, their hearts are with you, but still the swords are pointed against you. He says, Yabna Rasulullah, I entreat you to take into account before you go to Kufa the position and reputation of the Quraysh, the position of the Arabs, and above all, the position of Islam. If you will go towards Kufa, the Umayyads will surely interpret it as a state, as a step towards reclaiming your right. And if they will know that you want to reclaim your right, they will murder you. This is all that the Umayyads can do. And with your murder, Islam may die. Because after you, who is there? Who is there whom the Umayyads or any tyrant who succeeds Umayyads would be afraid of? Who would be there to stop violations of the rules of Islam? Who would be there to stop the hand of a kafir ruler from annihilating Islam? These are considerations that should move you against going there. And then all the historians, Mufid, Khwarizmi, all of them, Tabari, say that he ended his address to Imam Hussein alayhi salam by three exhortations, saying, Yabna Rasulullah, don't go to Kufa. Yabna Rasulullah, don't go to Kufa. And the last one was, don't please do it. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's words purely were that is the only way I can see that Islam would be saved, contrary to your belief that Islam would be destroyed by my going there. And indeed, we today see the wisdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, that sacrifice is made. Made those whose hearts were with him after him to rise, as we shall discuss inshallah from this Saturday night, to rise. The two or three groups of people rose from different places. We of course will be concentrating on one of them, Mukhtar. But a number of groups stood up. Not only that, that sacrifice remained so sacrosanct that it has remained intact till today and untainted by the machinations of Umayyad historians. From there, Imam Hussein alayhi salam moves on to the next station, Khuzaymiyah, and that station he used as a resting place. He spent a full day, a full night there, and then moved on to a station called Zurud. And at Zurud, an important event took place, because there he met Zuhair bin Qa'im, that valiant warrior of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Only once have we been able to discuss Zuhair till today, but inshallah we shall take opportunity to discuss more of him. Zuhair bin Qa'im was a person who was not associated with Imam Hussein alayhi salam at all. He was not in the camp of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He was not one of the companions of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. On the contrary, he was one of those who kept away from Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And hence, even on this journey, he made his best to keep a distance from Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He, with his tribesmen, he was the leader of his tribe. He was the chief of his tribe. They were coming from Hajj, having just performed the pilgrimage. So, same route that the Imam alayhi salam had taken out of Makkah. And they suddenly found that the caravan of Imam Hussein alayhi salam was along the same route. And his companions say that Zuhair was reluctant to get anywhere near the caravan of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, keeping his distance all the time. And it became inconvenient, because either he had to overtake Imam alayhi salam, who would catch up with him, or he had to remain behind, but he might catch up with the Imam alayhi salam. However, at Zurud, they merged willy-nilly. Imam alayhi salam placed his tents on the left side of the road, so Zuhair went to the right side of the road. They had to be within camping sites, and so Zuhair was obliged to camp right opposite the tent of the Imam alayhi salam. And suddenly, as he was sitting to have his meal with his companions, a messenger of the Imam alayhi salam comes and says, "O Zuhair, the grandson of the Prophet is remembering you and requests that you attend on him." And the moment that was said, everybody's hands were lifted up, that what now? What is going to happen next? The Imam alayhi salam now has taken the positive step, the first step, and is summoning Zuhair. How is Zuhair bin Qa'im to react to this? He was himself unsure. But just as happened in the case of Habib ibn Mabahir, except that Habib was sure of what he was going to do, the wife of Zuhair springs into action and says, "Oh Zuhair, are you not ashamed that the grandson of the Prophet should call you, and you should sit to take a second thought as to whether you would respond or not?" So Zuhair says, "What do I know what you will ask?" And she says, "Indeed not. Indeed, that is the reason you should go. How can you decide not to go, not even knowing what he will ask for? Attend on him, listen to his request, and then make up your mind as to whether you will respond to him or not." Zuhair thought that was perhaps the most sensible way to react. He left his food and went to attend to the Imam alayhi salam. God alone knows what passed between them, because there is no reported message as to what Zuhair was told in camera. But the moment Zuhair bin Qa'im came back from that tent, he was a different person altogether. The first thing he says to his wife is that, "Oh my dear wife, I give you talaq now. I will pay your full mahar now, and I want to see that you go. And the only reason I'm doing this is that I've decided I will join the Imam alayhi salam. That I say, and I always say, and I'm sure is your thought, that mere association with the Imam alayhi salam, even if it is a cursory association, even if it is a transitory association of that nature, matter of minutes can transform a person. Indeed, that association with the Imam alayhi salam is alchemy. It has the effect of changing metal into gold. And Zuhair has remained a famous figure in history, in the annals of Karbala, till today. And inshallah, we will discuss him tomorrow. We shall discuss him possibly day after tomorrow also. The speeches that Zuhair bin Qayyim made were absolutely at the top level in response to Imam Hussein alayhi salam, both before reaching Karbala and in Karbala. Those speeches have remained in the, as I said, annals of Karbala. And apart from that, his valiant fight at all stages with the army of Yazid, ultimately giving his life whilst he was defending the Imam in the course of his Salah. The Imam was not even allowed to lead Zuhr prayers. And it is Sa'id on one side, Zuhair on the other side, who guarded the Imam alayhi salam. Each arrow coming, they would shelter from the Imam alayhi salam, so much so that by the time the Imam alayhi and lived on, so long as those two rak'ah of Salatul Khawf continued. And immediately the Imam alayhi salam said, "Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh." Zuhair fell. His mission was completed. Not only that he fought for Imam alayhi salam, not only did he fight for the survival of Islam alayhi salam, he fought as it were for that first pillar of Islam alayhi salam. The Holy Prophet said, "As-salah amud al-deen." Salah is the pillar of Islam. If that pillar goes from one's life, Islam collapses from one's life. Hence do we say, and particularly to our youth, safeguard your salah at all costs. Shaytan is best at fighting us when we say our prayers, because he knows that so long as we maintain our salah, the five salah of the day, that long, not only do we recognize the existence of Allah, not only do we prostrate to Him, we establish that it is only the rule of Allah that prevails. It not only gives us the confidence to live, it gives us the true path on which to tread to the Day of Judgment. But once Salah goes, and this is what the Holy Prophet said, he said, protect your Salah at all costs, because once Salah starts to go, then everything will dismember from your body of Islam, one after the other. And it starts, alas, with the Fajr prayers. I think you will agree with me, that the Fajr prayers are the most important of prayers. Because what better way to start a day than to think of and thank Allah for the mercies that He will bestow upon us for the rest of the day. And the dua that we discussed a few days back, it provides us a fulcrum on which to revolve throughout the day. It provides us the basis on which we can have a strong hold throughout the day. And the next salah that is difficult to maintain is Zuhrayn, because we are busy at work. A few moments here and there, and everybody has told me, and I'm sure that's your experience, that the moment you form the intention that I will not let my Zuhrayn to pass off, I will surely see that within the lunch break I have, I will say my Zuhrayn, somehow provision is made. We find it in the Western world, where there may be no provision for Salah at all, and suddenly something happens. And you find an avenue has opened up for you to put your musalla and say your salah. Allah helps once there is a niyyah. Remembering the words of Imam Hussein alayhi salam to Farajdak, that we discussed last night. Well, Zuhair ibn Qayn has this great eminence that he died protecting Salah. That Salah, which was perhaps the last Salatul Jami'ah that the Imam alayhi salam conducted in person on the battlefield of Karbala. And a few moments later, Shaheed also collapsed, and the Imam alayhi salam immediately went to the bodies of them all. Well, that is Zuhair ibn Qayn. He turns around to his wife and says, I am giving you talaq, not because of any disagreement. I have decided to join the Imam alayhi salam, and I know. So we have some glimpse, although a vague one, some glimpse of what might have been discussed. And no wonder that the Imam alayhi salam would have warned Zuhair of the consequences. But how fortunate was Zuhair that he should not only have been included in that list, he was expressly called, like Habib ibn Madahir, not only expressly called, but because he kept away from the Imam, he was addressed by the Imam in person, not by letter. That is the great eminence that Zuhair ibn Qayn obtained. No wonder that his speeches, which I hope we will have the opportunity to discuss, are animated by the spirit of Hussain alayhi salam. Well, he says to her, I know that I will be martyred, and that is my goal. But I know a considerable inconvenience will follow on you if you are with me. Hence, it is only to spare you from that inconvenience, to spare you from that difficulty. And I've always lived with you, trying to spare you from problems. At this last minute of my life, I do not want to see you in problems. And asked a cousin of his who was in that group, according to one narration, Sheikh Mufid alayhi rahma, according to another narration of Sheikh Tusi, the cousin also followed him, and he asked another tribesman, but whoever, he asked a certain gentleman in his entourage to take his wife to her parents and gave her the money on which to sustain herself. He then valiantly turns to his tribesmen and says, as you heard me say to my wife, I'm joining the Imam alayhi salam. The instructions and orders from the Imam alayhi salam are that nobody joins him except one who comes to him willingly and voluntarily. And we shall come to this in a few more minutes, so I will not take your time saying what Zuhair said on this score. Hence, anybody who willingly wishes to join me is welcome to come with me. He must know that what is going to follow is a martyrdom. And those who do not want to follow me, I hereby withdraw and waive all my rights on you as your chief. All your allegiance to me as your chief, I waive them, and you are free now to do what you like. Free to go back, or free to do what you like. And he moved out of his tent and joined Imam Hussain alayhi salam. Imam Hussain alayhi salam remained there as the rule for that particular night. And from there, he moved on towards Fa'alabiyyah. That is a spot where the Imam alayhi salam next halted. And he was moving towards the Fa'alabiyyah. He saw an Arab coming from the opposite direction. The Imam alayhi salam was eager to get the up-to-date report from him. So he, as it were, made his way to approach this man. As he did so, he found that the man slightly veered away. So the Imam alayhi salam physically turned his horse to move to him. And as the Imam alayhi salam turned his horse to his right, the person turned his horse to the left. The Imam alayhi salam immediately realized that this person is not keen to talk to me. The Imam veered straight and proceeded on his journey. But behind the Imam alayhi salam were two other Asabis. They noticed this. They noticed the anxiety of the Imam alayhi salam to speak to this person, and that person's reluctance to speak to the Imam alayhi salam. They thought that was wrong. Yet they realized that there may be a good reason why this person whom they recognized as an Asadi, should behave in that way. The Imam alayhi salam, of course, marched on. They remained behind. When this Asadi had gone past, they turned behind, followed him, caught up with him, stopped him, and said, "We are two Asadis. You look to us to be an Asadi. Are you so?" And he says, "Yes." He introduces himself, they introduce themselves, and they know him ultimately to be an honest person, an intelligent, reliable person. So they turned around to him and said, we saw the Imam alayhi salam gesturing and behaving as though he wanted to speak to you, but you behaved in a manner to show that you were avoiding him. What is the position?" And he said, "I could not have faced him. I did that because I could not have faced him. I knew you would have asked me the latest news from Kufa. I neither had the words nor the courage to tell him what I last witnessed." So they say, "Well, tell us, what did you last witness?" And he says, "I last witnessed the bodies of Muslim ibn Aqil and Hani ibn Urwa being dragged in the streets of Kufa by their legs. That was a pitiful sight that I saw, but I don't have the courage even to repeat those words to the Imam alayhi salam. How do I?" And they parted. Well, night fell, and these two people had to make their camp there and then. The next morning at dawn, they galloped on to catch up with the Imam alayhi salam, and at dawn, they caught up with him at Sa'labiyya. There they found the Imam alayhi salam with his companions, saluted him and said, "Ya Ibn Rasulillah, we have some information for you that we think you were seeking but were not able to obtain. We have gathered it for you." So the Imam alayhi salam says, "Yes, what is it?" He says, "Yes, but we wonder whether we should speak to you in the presence of all these persons present, or shall we speak to you in camera, in privacy?" And the Imam alayhi salam says, "There is no secret I have from these gentlemen who are around me." And they turned around and said, "We saw you yesterday making an effort to speak to that Asadi gentleman." And the Imam says, "Yes, I wanted to find out from him what is the latest from Kufa. But when I noticed his slight reluctance to speak to me, I immediately called it off." They said, "Yes, indeed, he was reluctant to speak to you. You judged him so well. We are Asadis too. We noticing your desire to speak to him and your inability to speak to him, we changed him and found out the truth from him. And all he had to say to you, which he did not have the courage to, was that he last saw what I just described." The Imam alayhi salam, of course, immediately wept, and all the companions wept, and the two Asadis wept. And when that was done, the Asadi said, "We have just one more thing to say to you, Yabda Rasulillah." And the Imam says, "Yes, tell me." And they say, "Yabda Rasulillah, we see you are taking this path. We hope you are not going to Kufa." He says, "Yes, I am going to Kufa, because it is Muslim who wrote to me this letter. He said people have made bay'ah to me. What do I reply to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala when these people call me as their imam? They have made bay'ah. Do I say to my Allah that scared of Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, I refuse to go and fulfill my duty and accomplish what is required of me as an imam?" And they turn around and say, "You know religion better than any of us. But to us, we do not think we should go there at all, because as we see it, you have no Shias left in Kufa." How sad that situation should reach with the Imam alayhi salam. It is a scary situation. It is scary because history tends to repeat itself. And what has befallen the Kufians could befall us. We need to ask ourselves as we beat our chests tonight, tomorrow night, and on Friday, on particularly Ashura night, where we stand, because conditions are going to be more and more difficult. And let us be aware of this, and let us prepare ourselves for it. Now I am able to stand and say that we must not miss any salah. And I am sure, inshallah, you don't miss any. But haven't we been told that a time will come that you recite one salah will be like having a burning piece of coal on your palm? Haven't we been warned of that? Haven't we, in 1996, discussed those alamat-e-zuhur which will make it so hard to live as a Muslim? And particularly the time of Sufyani. How shall we react when the Imam alayhi salam will then come? He, of course, will not need to be told, Ya Ibn Rasulullah, you have no shares in the world. Because he will come with his 313. That's what happened in Karbala. Allah will not allow to be repeated when the Mahdi, Ajjalallahu Farajahu, will come. But shall we be in that group? That is the question that worries us. That is the question that hurts us. And hence, we must make the most use of this time that Allah has given us. And it is Allah's good mercy on us that we are fortunate to have this particular period. And what better way of preparing ourselves for this period than to have these madrasas? Because it is in these madrasas that we recall the valor with which, for example, Qais bin Mas'ab goes on the minbar and says that they should be la'anat on Yazid and on Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad in the very presence and at the nose of Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad. And we will cite another instance tonight, inshaAllah wa ta'ala. That is the best place indeed, whilst we give condolences to the 12th Imam to gather the spirit we need, much more than anything else, the spirit we need to adhere to this time and to resist and confront the difficulties that befall us in these times. Well, that is how the spirit proceeded. The Imam alayhi salam, having heard these words from these asadis, then turns, and this is a beautiful piece of dialogue. I thought I shouldn't miss saying it to you. He turns to these children of as the book says, Bani Aqil, the progeny, the children of Aqil, Muslim being only one of the children of Aqil, but there are other children of Aqil. Turns to them and says, "What is your opinion in this matter? You have heard what these two Asadi brothers have to tell us. What is your opinion in this matter?" And they turn around and say, "Ya Aba Abdullah, one of the two things, either we shall go and avenge the blood of Muslims, or we shall taste that death and that lovely taste of Shahada, which he has already had the good fortune of tasting." What can the Imam alayhi salam say? What can the Asadis say? The Imam alayhi salam then turns to those Asadis and says, beautiful words flowing, words that were not only meant, but words that were acted upon. The Imam alayhi salam turns round to them and says, "Oh my brothers, do they have anything better to live for in this life after Muslim bin Aqil than what they have said?" And we keep asking ourselves, do we have anything better to live for in this life apart from these remembrance of Imam Hussain alayhi salam, as those shuhada did? And the two Asadis say, having heard those words, we saw that the resolution is such that this caravan will proceed to Kufa and they will be martyred. We left them there because we did not want to partake in that martyrdom. And they left them there. That then was Sa'alabiyah. But two more things happened at Sa'alabiyah. Apart from the fact that is the important station where the Imam alayhi salam received the news of Hazrat Muslim. Then, as you know, and I will not take your time on it, the Imam alayhi salam went into the tent, passed the news to the children of Muslim, and in particular Ruqayyah, and they all became so grievous, particularly because the Imam alayhi salam behaved with them as an uncle would behave to a just orphaned child. His glorious words, "Does it matter so long as Hussein is alive? and so long as Hussein is now your father. Words of consolation that I'm sure bore strength to those orphans of Hazrat Muslim alayhi salam. But two more things happened at that particular station. The first was that in the afternoon of that day, the Imam alayhi salam had 40 wings. The position was such that even when the Imam alayhi salam had 40 wings, Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam and Hazrat Ali Akbar alayhi salam would not leave him alone, lest a stray arrow might hit him, a stray enemy might cause him harm. They always were at his side, and that suddenly so he opened his eyes and recited the ayah, Inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un. So Shahzad Ali Akbar says, Father, why that ayah at this stage? And the Imam alayhi salam says, My dear son, what can I tell you? I saw an angel, as it were, saying that this group is moving on its journey. Death is coming from in front of them, from ahead of them, on its journey to take the lives of them all. Another son would have become weary, would have become scared of those words. Shahzad Ali Akbar turns around and says, Father, Alasna ala al-haq? But are we not on haq? Are we not on truth? And the Imam alayhi salam says, Bala, for sure, by the one in whose hands my soul lies, we are surely on haq. Hazrat Ali Akbar says, Then, Father, what does it matter whether we march on towards our death and overtake our death, or the death marches to us and death overtakes us? That was the spiritual bala. Karbala is not only an example of physical bravery and valor. The spiritual bravery that is effused from Karbala is what keeps that light kindling till today, is what means Karbala today remains what it is, despite its erratic history over the centuries at the hands of various tyrants who have ruled over Iraq since the days of Muawiyah. Well, another thing that happens at that particular place is that as they are ready to move out of Sa'labiyya, an elderly person comes to meet the Imam alayhi salam. He is described by Sayyidina Ta'awus as Abu Hurra. And Abu Hurra says, Yabna Rasulillah, where are you? Yes, not a second thought about it, despite all this news. Yet another man comes to stop him. And I give you this list of people stopping him to show what determination and resolution the Imam alayhi salam had. And to each he gave an answer according to the intelligence of the questioner. This old man comes and says, You must not go to Kufa, Yabna Rasulillah. They've all turned against you. I am coming from there. And having heard that you are on your trip, I've been looking for you, because I'm coming from the opposite direction. I've been looking for you to tell you there is no room left for you in Kufa. It is not intelligent for you to go there anymore. And the Imam alayhi salam says, Yes, but the command of Allah is that I should. And he says, Yes, but they will martyr you, Yabna Rasulillah. And he says, Indeed they will. Rightly have you said so. You have predicted right. They will martyr me. But take my words now. And it is to give you those words that I particularly cited this. Because from this Saturday we shall start a discussion on those words of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. Imam Hussain alayhi salam says, Aba Harra, watch my words. Every single one of them who will have a share in assassinating me and will even have one drop of blood on his hands, one drop of my blood on his hands, each one of them will lead a life of degradation from the day Karbala ends. He will continue to live the life of degradation until Allah will appoint over all of them an authority that will be out to kill them. An authority, a ruler who will pick each one of them and each one of them will be killed in most humiliating circumstances, will be killed in circumstances in which they will ever regret having killed me. They will not only be humiliated, degraded in their lives, degraded in their deaths, all their properties will get confiscated by that authority that will be in power on that day, and on the day of judgment there will be no shafa'ah from them, and their place will be the worst place in hell. One can see those words of Imam Hussein alayhi salam having come true so soon after his martyrdom. Usually, and this is Allah's mercy, He takes time to bring recompense to people. Allah, in the way He has provided His scheme, takes time. Hence, the elderly people in the communities tell us that those who make more zulm on this earth get a long life. And Allah in Quran explains this. He says, إِنَّمَا نُمْلِي لَهُمْ إنما نملي لهم ولا يحسبن الذين كفروا إنما نملي لهم لخير لأنفسهم ولكن نملي لهم ليزدادوا إثما. Those who do kufr in this world, who disobey Allah and behave in a tyrannic way, let them not think that Allah is giving them time for their khair because they have done good. Or so that they do good. إِنَّمْنَا نُمْلِ لَهُمْ لِيَزْدَادُوا إِثْمًا. Allah gives them time so that they keep piling sins over sins, so that when they return to Allah, what is waiting for them is only heinous punishment from Allah. That is how He acts. And yet, in the question of Karbala, we find that retribution from Allah befell each one of them. Muhtar kept saying, I will not want to die. I only ask Allah to give me life long enough until each one of those people who had a hand in the murder of Imam Hussein alayhi salam is brought to justice and is killed before I die. What wonder, because Hazrat Amir alayhi salam had predicted that Mukhtar would do that. Be that as it may, these are the words of the Imam alayhi salam uttered at Sa'alabiyah, the 8th station. And then the 9th station was Shukuk. That is the station, I only touch on it because again it was a resting place for him. He was with children and women and hence provided them resting places. Shukuk was where he rested too, but that is where he meets another elderly poet. And the poet goes to him and says, Yabna Rasulillah, you're going to Kufa? And the Imam alayhi salam says, yes. And then he says, but are you not risking your life? And the Imam alayhi salam there provides that quadruplet that I mentioned on the fifth night, the fifth sitting of ours, when we were discussing memorable words of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. I will not detain you over those words because we have already discussed them, only to remind you those precious words. He said to this person there that if the world is precious, if life is precious, how much more precious is the pleasure of Allah? What more virtuous thing than to send salawat on Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. Well, this is what we noticed. Qais bin Masrah did in difficult circumstances, and so did Abdullah bin Maktur, whom we shall discuss in a few minutes. But coming back to those words, he says, this life is precious. How much more precious is the pleasure of Allah? If the bodies are created so that they die, then what is better than to die by a sword fighting in the path of Allah, in a jihad? Then he says, if rizq is predestined, if what we will earn is predestined, then why hoard wealth? And fourthly, if treasure, if wealth is something that we shall leave behind and go empty-handed, then why grasp that which we will ultimately abandon? What is the sense in it? Those precious words were delivered at Shukuk, which alhamdulillah have remained with us. And then from Shukuk, the Imam alayhi salam moved to Zabala. And it is at Zabala that he receives the information that Abdullah bin Yaqtud has also been martyred. He was a messenger of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Qais bin Masrah was given a letter. He was sent with a message in person. And again, he was stopped by Hussein bin Numair at Qadisiyah, asked who he was. He said he was a messenger of Hussein alayhi salam. Immediately sent to Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad. Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad convenes the court and asks him who he is. He says, I am a messenger. So he says, you will have to curse Ali, and you have to curse Ma'adullah Abu Abdullah al-Hussein, and you have to send salawat on Muawiyah and Yazid, la'anatullahi alayhim. He says, yes, is that what I'm expected to do? I will go on the minbar, just as Qais bin Masrah had done. He goes on the minbar and says, all mercy of Allah, of course, starts with praising Allah and then says all mercy and salawat of Allah on the Holy Prophet and on Imam Ali and on Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And he says all the curse and the burst of curse of Allah on Muawiyah and on Yazid and on Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad. What Qais did, you exactly find Abdullah doing now, repeating itself in that way. You can imagine what shivers must have gone under the spine of Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad. He could but do one thing, order their assassination, which is what they were looking forward to, because they had adopted those words of Imam Hussein, that what are these bodies for if they are going to die, if they do not die in the path of Allah. But then he did a glorious thing. He did not leave things there. He says, you see me here on this minbar because I'm a messenger of Hussein alayhi salam, and I have come to convey his message to you. And his message to you is that he's already on the way. He has left Makkah. He's on the way to Kufa. Be prepared to fight. Be prepared to welcome him. You call him, mind you. You are his host. Do not abandon him now. Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad will soon kill me. I know what is going to happen to me next. We've got to fight in the path of Allah. We've got to fight helping the Hujjah of Allah. So be prepared. Do not be scared of this Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad. If he kills you, you will only go to heaven. And Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad says, this is where I propose to send you, but you will not go to heaven, you will go to hell. And Abdullah says, there is nothing better I can expect of you than to order my execution. Again, he was taken to the top of the palace so that his every bone is shattered. Well, that news reaches the Imam alayhi salam in Zabala, and he takes a historic step, typical of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, typical of that heart with piety, as we discussed yesterday. He immediately convenes the full gathering of all the members of his caravan and tells them that I have, and amazingly, all historians say that he had a written statement. Normally, he made his speeches extempore or impromptu, more often impromptu. But this time, he had a written statement and he read his speech, most unlike him. And in that written speech, he says to them, he says, I have received news about Muslim, and I received news about Hani bin Urwa and about Abdullah. All of them have been martyred. And I noticed that as they were martyred, those who invited me to go to Kufa and those who called themselves my shears sat back and watched their bodies being dragged in the main streets of Kufa. I now therefore have come to the definite conclusion that my journey also can only be for martyrdom, and I and each one of you who will come with me will be martyred as was Muslim and as was Hani. And so those who wish to come with me in the hope that I am going to a land where 100,000 people have made my bay'ah, let them rethink their position. The 100,000 have changed their minds. Bay'ah to me is a voluntary act. Golden words. Because until now we have been discussing of how bay'ah has been extracted from the people, how Muawiyah forced people to make bay'ah, how Yazid is now forcing people to make bay'ah, and the threat of murdering them. Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, Bay'ah is a voluntary matter. And golden words from the angle of human rights that we talk about today. He then proceeds to say, so those of you who felt I was going to a land where I have people who have sworn allegiance to me, those allegiances have been breached. They have been infringed. Do not expect, therefore, that there will be an army to fight with me. And those of you who wish to leave me, this is the appropriate time to leave me, because it is a convenient place from which to find your other routes. And it is said, a large number of people left the Imam alayhi salam. You remember, he took more camels for his caravan. Now he did not need them. A large number of people left him. He was left, according to Tabari, with only his 72 that ultimately martyred, and just a few more. That was Zabala. And from Zabala, he moved on. He moved on to Sharif, but not much happened in that place, except that again he met a venerable person from Bani Ikrimah, from the tribe of Bani Ikrimah. And this person of Bani Ikrimah says to him, where are you going, Yabda Rasulillah? And he says, I am going towards Kufa. Again, the same story repeats. And again, he says to this person of Bani Ikrimah, that do not worry. Even if I am martyred, then those who will martyr me will be humiliated in no time. Each one of them will be humiliated. I'm not only repeating the first one, he added something of importance which I wish to pass on to you, because it affects you and your lives. The Imam alayhi salam says, not only will they be humiliated in their lifetime, not only will they be humiliated on the day of judgment, but even after their death, up to the day of judgment, there will be a group of people who will continue to humiliate them and curse them, and that group of people is yourself. The Imam alayhi salam put you on that map of Karbala, at that place. Sharaf was the place where he remembered even those who would turn around and curse those who not only killed the Imam alayhi salam, but those who partook in any way at all in killing him. And then from Sharaf, the Imam alayhi salam moves to Dhu Husn. And Dhu Husn was the place to which I had hoped I would reach this evening, and it's grace of Allah that I have. The only other station in between before Dhu Husn that I need to mention is Batan al-Aqaba. But there again, the event that took place was meeting an elderly person and a conversation with him. But when the Imam alayhi salam left Sharaf, and as he moved on, somebody from his group turns around and says, Allahu Akbar. When that was said, the Imam alayhi salam immediately responds, Allahu Akbar. And having responded, turns and says, what is it? And the person says, I have seen trees. And so I recited takbir, I've seen tops of trees. Immediately another companion says, that is impossible, because there are no trees here. This is an area which is totally a desert. No trees grow here. And the Imam alayhi salam says, yes, no trees grow here. Let us look more carefully. And when everybody looked more carefully, they found that what they were seeing were ears of horses. And everybody said, well, this then is an army that is chasing us. And the Imam alayhi salam says, it is better then that we position ourselves in such a way that they cannot encircle us. And immediately a companion says, Yabda Rasulillah, that mountain of Dhu Husn to our left, if we position ourselves along that mountain, we will have the mountain behind us, we will only have them in front of us, and we can then confront them and fight them. And so they moved there. Soon that company arrives. They turn out to be people with spears. And what they were seeing were really the points of spears. And it turned out to be the army of Hur. Hur had been sent with 1,000 people. We must continue with this tomorrow. But at least to say this much for tonight before we pause on Dhul Hism, because the importance of Dhul Hism is that the Imam alayhi salam delivered two speeches to the army of Hur, which inshallah I shall start with tomorrow. And the third speech was delivered at Baiza, again to the army of the next station, Baiza, to the army of Hur. But when that army arrived, and Hur arrived with that army, Imam alayhi salam, having just answered the salutations, turns to Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam and says, "Abbas, do you see these human beings? And do you see the state in which they are? They are so thirsty. They are so thirsty. The heat of the desert has affected them so much that some of these soldiers have their tongues out." One would have said, "Ya Rasulullah, kill them now when they are thirsty." The Imam alayhi salam takes exactly the opposite course, says, "Abbas, we have water, give them water." Each one of those soldiers was given water. Safi is Abbas. We still call him Safi, but we call him Safi as Sakina now for reasons which I just mentioned and reasons which you know by heart. He was the Safi, and Abbas was told, "Take your boys and give them water." But Abbas, water not only to these soldiers, even to the horses. Look at the state in which the horses were. Each of those enemies were given water. I turn round to them tonight, as if they were right to ask tonight, to all those 998 people, apart from Hur and his son Ali. Those are the only ones that came to Imam Hussein. We ask the remaining 998 that when Hussein asked for water for his 6 months, did you not even remember that you got water at the Dhul Hism, that he had little water with him, but he gave it to you? Not only did he give the water to you, he gave water to your horses who needed the water. Not only that, he then said, "These horses' hooves are burning. Pour water under the hooves of the horses so that they are safe." This is how the Imam alayhi salam helped the army of Hur on that particular time. None of them responded on the day of Ashura. Abbas alayhi salam, as the day passed, this morning turned to Imam Hussain alayhi salam and said, "Oh my master, oh Mawlai, allow me to go and fight these kafirs. They are cowards, all of them. Let me go and fight at least one battle with them so that they know, they get a taste of what they are here for." The Imam alayhi salam would not let him do so. You have heard so often that the Imam told him, "Ya Abbas, you are my commander. The commander does not go to fight first." Ultimately, a stage was reached when Abbas said to Imam Hussain alayhi salam, "Mawlai, where is the army of which I am the commander? Now Allah Muhammad has gone, Qasim has gone, let me go and fight." The words of the Imam alayhi salam are, "Abbas, you and I will fight together. When I will be ready to fight, I will take you." Ultimately, when Imam Hussain alayhi salam went to fight, he was alone. He fought those kafirs himself. Fought them so much that they ran up to the walls of Kufa. Imam Hussain alayhi salam, having seen them run to the walls of Kufa, comes back to the body of Abbas and says, "Abbas, you are lying so peacefully here. Abbas, don't you want to see how I have been fighting? You were saying you would give them the taste of life. Abbas, I have scared them. They have fled up to Kufa, the whole lot of them. And Abbas, but I am now alone here." As Muslim says, one could see the body of Abbas shaking, as it were Abbas saying, "Mawla, you can make me alive again, and I will fight with you." But even when Abbas went to take leave and said, "Mawla, we let me fight," and he said, "We'll fight together," soon Sakina comes to the rescue of Abbas and says, "Oh father, we have no water at all. Can uncle go and bring some water for us?" And when Sakina mentions the name Abbas,
Imam Hussein turns to Sakina and says, "Oh, Sakina, do you know what you are up to? Sakina, you might regret this." And Sakina says, "Father, we are so thirsty, we will die without water. Let Abbas go to bring water." Imam Hussein alayhi salam then says, "Yes, Abbas, go. Let's go only to bring water and remove the sword from the teeth of Abbas." Removes the sword from the sheath of Abbas. Abbas turns around and says, "Oh my brother, how am I to fight if you take away the sword? I want to kill them as I go to bring water for Sakina." And Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, "You are not going to fight them, Abbas. Take your spear for your defense." Abbas moves on with that water skin, that milk of Sakina with him. And history has it in golden words that Abbas and the Turas, thirsty, totally thirsty, thirsty of 3 days, and came out of Furat, totally thirsty, asked his horse to have water. Even the horse did not have water. But as Abbas was coming back, first he found his left hand amputated. And when his left hand is amputated, Abbas moves the bones, the mesh and the alam, both into his right hand. And when the right hand is amputated, what is Abbas now to do? Look at the valor of this person. The first thing he does in the nick of time is to grab that water skin, that mesh, holds it with his teeth, and then the alam to him is as important as the mesh. It is the standard of Hussein. Therefore do I say, whenever the alam of Abbas is taken out, keep it aloft. Don't let it slant as far as possible, because Abbas kept it straight aloft till the end. He held it to his chest and moved on. Look at the valor of this person, so keen to see that drop of water reaches Sakina. Never did Abbas fail in his promise in his life. And now then, that arrow comes straight aimed at that particular water skin. And when the water drops, hopes of Abbas to live drop. He now has no means of living. Hussein at the camp sees the alam now wavering. As he sees the alam wavering, he knew what was happening. Soon the salam comes, "Assalamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah." And all that Imam Hussein says, "In kasara zahri wa qilla tahilati." Now my waist is totally broken. My waist is broken. I can't stand straight. All my hopes are shattered. He goes to the body of Abbas alayhi salam. Abbas, alhamdulillah, is still alive. He turns to Abbas and says, "Abbas, you fought with that fella. Abbas, you went away. You went away before you and I could fight together. But do you have anything to tell me in these last moments?" And this is a lesson Abbas has left for us all. Look at the service of Abbas to Hussein at this last moment. He leaves the wasiya to us. The wasiya to us goes this way. He turns round to the Imam alayhi salam and says, "Ya Aba Abdullah, nothing is more important to me than your ziyara. I want your ziyara before I die. I want to be able to visit you and to see you before I die." Imam says, "What stops you?" He says, "There is an edge of an arrow in one eye. There is blood in the other. And where are the hands with which I can help myself?" The Imam alayhi salam removes that edge of arrow, clears those eyes. Abbas turns down and says, "Assalamu alayka ya Mawlai." Imam Hussein says, "Abbas, even now, ya Mawlai, when you are moving, can't you even now say salam to you, O brother, as I say my last salam to you, my brother?" And Abbas says, "Brother, one last thing, don't take my body to that." What face will I show to Sakina? What face do I show to Sakina if you take my body? Ala la'natullahi ala al-qawmi al-zalimin wa say'alamu al-nazina zalamu ayyamun qalabin yanqalibun inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.